My name is Marlon Sanders. I have with me
Jonathan Mizell
and Declan Dunn.
And today what we're going to be talking about is how to avoid your most common marketing mistakes. We have the opportunity of speaking to hundreds and even thousands of people around the nation. And doing this over the last past year and a half, what we've seen and discovered is that so many people in business are all making the same mistakes. They're all doing the same kinds of things. These are mistakes that are costing them thousands and hundred thousands and even more in pure cash profits. So what I want to do, and what we're going to do, is talk about these different mistakes so that you can kind of have a little mental checklist, check them off against your business, and see if you're making any of these mistakes, and if you are, then you can take the actions to correct it. And we'll throw out some stories and some different examples, that kind of thing. I think this is one of the most instructive things that you can do in your business, because so many times when you read business books and that type of thing, they tell you what to do, but sometimes it's just as instructive or even more instructive to talk about what not to do. So having said that, we're just going to launch into these marketing mistakes. There's no particular order. We kind of just thrown them here in this big grab basket, and we're going to pull them out one by one and go through these marketing mistakes. And I think you're going to learn a lot from this. It's going to be very helpful to you in your business and help you make an immediate impact on your cash flow profits. So marketing mistake, the first one would be sinking a fortune into an unproven product. And this is one that I've just seen a lot of people that come to the seminar do. You know, we're talking to them and they come up and they tell us, well, I have this product and I've spent all of this money, you know, creating it or building it. And now, well, how do I market it? What do I do? And sometimes what they find out is, oops, I just spent all this money and all this time creating a product that, guess what? Nobody wants to buy it. In fact, it reminds me that Jonathan had someone come up and in the context of online marketing, and I think maybe he was talking to him over the phone and they were a subscriber to his newsletter. And they mentioned to him that that's one of the benefits of online marketing is you can actually take your product or your product idea and test it online and find out very quickly and inexpensively if you have a winner or if you have a loser. Do you have any comments on that one, John?
Well, you know, the biggest problem is when people fall in love with their products or fall in love with their services before they determine whether or not there's a real market. Isn't it ironic how often I talk to people and I say, have you ever tested this product or found out whether anyone wants it? And they'll say, well, you know, my wife thinks this is the best idea that she has ever heard. Well, of course, she's your wife. Or they'll ask their brother-in-law or their cousin or their best friend. And the bottom line is this needs to be tested. The idea needs to be tested, the product, to the real marketplace instead of just, you know, getting some family member's opinion.
Well, actually, I design websites, and the World Wide Web is renowned for having people go on without knowing what they're doing. And there was a company that, in the same context, spent $20,000 creating the product, the website, the information product, and they didn't let anybody know about it. So nobody came to the thing. It was totally dead because they assumed they just put it up, mm-hmm. and it was like a field of dreams and people would come. And you know when I read about this guy? In Inc. magazine, after the site had closed down, after his whole investment had been wiped out, he managed to find and get into Inc. magazine. Why didn't he get into them before he closed it down?
Which probably brings us to the next marketing mistake, which is feeling that somehow marketing is tainted, and if you build it, they will come, and you don't need to do any marketing. Sitting next to an airplane talking to a lady who was a book author, and she wrote books. And it was really funny because she had all these conflicts with her publisher because they marketed her books. And she felt that if she just wrote a really great book, that people would buy it. And you didn't need to market it. And she just didn't understand all of that crass commercialism involved in those marketing in the marketing department of the book company.
Unfortunately, for many artistic people, that crass commercialism is what allows them to pay their bills, to pay their rent, to actually buy their food and to support themselves. You really have to be 100% focused on marketing. Before you buy letterhead, before you have any work done, before you rent office space, before you lease office equipment, the number one question you have to ask yourself is, how am I going to get customers? If you can't answer that question, then don't waste your time or your money with anything else. Otherwise, it just becomes a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with a hobby. I mean, for example, I go fly fishing. It's a very unprofitable thing for me to do. It costs me a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. It's really fun, and I really enjoy doing it, but I don't think of it as a business. If I tried to make a business out of fly fishing, I wouldn't make very much money. You need to be able to separate the hobby from the business. The business has to be making money, and in order to make money, it absolutely has to focus on marketing and getting new customers.
So if they take that approach and they don't like crass commercialism and they don't want to advertise and they don't want to be in business, they might as well be honest with themselves from the start.
Right, just call it a hobby and just say this is something fun that I like to do.
What I've seen is that people, there's an expression, an old cliche of don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and this is what I see people do in terms of selling and marketing all the time. In other words, because there are some salespeople that are dishonest or liar, cheat, or steal, or misrepresent, that they feel that that's an intrinsic part of selling and that you have to do that in order to sell. In fact, in my seminars, I have people raise their hands if they have any of those associations to selling. You know, tainted, evil, dirty, dishonest, lying, cheating, misrepresenting, stealing, hyping, all of those things, and just about everybody raises their hands because we all have been raised with those, you know, being taught that salespeople are bad and salespeople cheat and lie and all of those things. Well, yeah, there are salespeople out there who do that. I also know some unbelievably successful salespeople who are the most honest, genuine business people that you will ever meet, and they do such a great value and perform great services for their clients. And so that's the way I look at selling, that you have this incredible value and you're selling it to your customers for a lot less than the value is worth. And I call it dollars for dimes. You're selling them dollars of value for dimes, and because of that, you're doing them a great noble service. You don't need to oversell things. You don't need to misrepresent. What you need to do, though, is appropriately represent the benefits of the product, because one marketing mistake people make is that they underrepresent the product, and that's extremely common. They deliver all of these incredible benefits and value, and they don't communicate that to their prospects.
The customers do not know what your benefits are. Customers do not know why they should do business with you. So it is imperative that you describe the benefits, describe the end results, and very, very clearly denominate why, the reasons why the customer should do business with you. They're not going to do business with you just because you got your shingle out. In fact, people have a reluctance to doing business with anybody, and they have to be persuaded just in order to, some cases, just to get the customer's foot in the door, just to get them to begin the relationship. They must be persuaded that the business is able, competent, and going to be able to perform and produce the end results that the customers want.
And when people have an aversion to selling, you're saying all these bad experiences, mm-hmm. they notice them because they didn't get the benefit of the product, for one.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
But how many times is a good sale is transparent? You don't even notice the sale because you're using the product. You're not even thinking about it.
Very good point. Next marketing mistake, no back end. The back end of your business is your repeat business, your follow-up business. And so many people go into business, they have people come, you know, in our seminars, they come up to me, they have one product and it sells for $7, $8, $10, or
$20. Even $20 or $30.
Yeah, and they think that they're going to run this huge business and make all of this money off of one product. Folks, it isn't going to happen. You've got to have a repeat business.
You've got to have a back end. Your most valuable, the most valuable thing you can do is not make sales. It is generate customers, because those are customers who will buy from you again and again. It is practically impossible, trust me, I know, to make a profit with a $10, $15, $20, even $30 product on the front end. You must, typically you're going to have to amortize your entire sales cost into those customers, and you're probably going to be at a break even or a slight profit or maybe even a slight loss. Where you really start to make the money is after you have already gotten that customer in your database. They are more likely to buy from you. Again, it's been said that if someone does business with a company and enjoys the experience, they're as much as 30 times more likely to do business with that company again. And the reason is because there is a developed trust there and confidence, and the person feels comfortable doing business with that company. That's where the real profits come from the back end. Very rarely do they come from the front end.
You know, I know million-dollar businesses that just happen to have a large initial sell, and I know multiple ones of them, and they don't do much to go back and sell their customers again. And yes, they're making a lot of money, but how much more money could they make? They're cultivating the relationships and going back to the customers, because what you said is exactly true. The most expensive sell you'll ever make and the hardest sell you'll ever make is the first sell. Once you've developed a little trust, once someone's given you their money and you've given them value for that, and they feel good about you and they feel good about the product, they trust you and they're buying defenses down, it is so much easier then to go back again, whether it's in a direct mail letter or a little phone call or however you want, and ask for more money. And very, very, very seldom do people spend all the most money they want to spend on the first transaction. Instead, they're just kind of putting their little toe in the water and getting it wet. And what you're missing, it's like the tip of the iceberg, and you're missing out on the iceberg of profits. Of all you're doing is just making one sell to people and then going on.
Without a doubt. If someone does business with you and they like the experience and they enjoy the experience, what happens is they actually develop in their own mind, they have done business with you once before, and they are very comfortable doing business with you again. In fact, when someone does business with you, you can then know that that person is comfortable doing business with your company and the way that you do business. So, if, for example, if you have a certain type of offer or a certain style of copywriting or a certain type of product or a certain type of order mechanism or a certain type of sales process, one thing you know about that customer once they come in once is they're responsive to that sales process. And the way that you've done things in the past is the way that that customer is comfortable with you doing things in the future. They respond to the type of offers you make. They respond to your type of copywriting. They respond to your type of sales process, to your order process. It's natural for them to buy from you again, because they naturally were filtered out from all the customers who you originally contacted, who saw your ad, who saw your letter. They were the ones who filtered themselves through and said, I like to do business the way that this person does business. Well, that doesn't change. Once they do business with you once, assuming that you haven't totally turned your business around between the first sale and the second sale, they've established that they're comfortable with not just you, but the way that your business actually is.
Well, the bottom line is you're not recognizing that the biggest asset your company has is your customer base. If you were to create a book, the intellectual property, you copyright it, you protect it, you sell it, you'd never throw it away. So why do people throw away their customer base by not having a back end, not having another product or service to offer them?
This is also one of the reasons we emphasize in our seminars using guarantees, risk reversals, free bonuses. I do a lot in my advertising writing section, because you've got to do everything you can to get that customer on board and make it easy for them and very enticing for them to do business with you the first time. And what I call, I have a thing called twister marketing. And you begin with a little funnel, you suck them into your funnel, and then you make larger sales as the funnel gets larger. And that first sell may only be a $20 or $100 sell or a $500 sell, depending on what business you're in. And then you go up to the larger sales and get larger dollar amounts after you've established a relationship and some trust with a customer.
I get asked a lot, you know, what if I don't have a back end? Well, if you can't find a back end product, then find a similar business, even a competitor, and say, let's do a joint venture. You need to get your customers used to receiving pleas for money from you, not pleas for money, but sales letters and sales materials and things from you, so that they know that you're, and they're comfortable with you constantly and consistently asking them for money. When I don't have a back end, an appropriate back end, I just find a competitor who does, and I say, let's mail your letter to my list. That way, and we'll split the profits. That way, the customers get used to receiving information from me, and they also get a product that will help them I mean, my feeling about using other people's products as a back end is it's a way to keep your customers used to receiving information from you, and it's also a way to get extra money. I'll just give you an example. I did a joint venture recently with a competitor of mine where we mailed my letter to his list. He had no back end. And we took a sales letter that had been pulling about 2 or 3%, depends upon the list that we were mailing it to. We've mailed it several times to about a dozen different lists. We mailed it to his list with an endorsement letter, just a little note from him to his customers saying, "This is Jonathan Mizell's product. It's a really good product. You should check it out." We converted 7% of those customers to sales, which is 3 or 4 times the amount of customers we got when we tested any other list. And that's because in this case it was my competitor's back end. I was helping him work his back end, but whether I helped him or he helped me, we both ended up making an extra $5,000 or $7,000, and that's what it's all about.
What's really interesting, Jonathan, is recently you've sold, I don't remember, it's a $3,000 or $4,000 product to your customer list, and it's not your product. And it's really interesting, somebody that's out there that's selling a $20 or $30 product, but if it's to the right market, maybe they can find somebody else that has a $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 product with a proven sales letter or a proven sales process or sales system that they can just go ahead and endorse to their customers, and all of a sudden, you know, they've multiplied their profits. Even if they're splitting the profits 50-50 with the other company, which is fairly common, they're still going to multiply their profits many, many, many times over. It's a lot of cash in your pocket when you do that kind of thing.
Yeah, and they're not going to work as hard. The first sale is the hardest.
Yes.
And if you don't have a back end, you're setting yourself up for the hardest sale throughout your whole business, where the second, third, fourth are the easiest.
Of course, there's also a little progression there. Typically, you won't go from a $20 product to a $4,000 product. That's why we do a little funnel. You know, you work them up with a funnel. You sell them something maybe $40 or whatever, and then maybe $100 or $200, and then maybe $500 or $1,000, and you kind of work your way up the scale there. The next marketing mistake is what I call bandwagon jumping, and boy, have I ever seen this. It's kind of like, what is the flavor of the day? And it's people, God bless them, who just, they start a business and don't really give it a fair chance to work, and then kind of get just a tad bit discouraged with it and hop onto the next business, and then hop from that business to the next one. And every time you talk to them, they're in a new business, and you feel like, so what business are you in today?
Well, not only does that kill their chance of a back end because they never really develop one single customer base, but, you know, entrepreneurs have two bad qualities. One is they tend to not give things enough time. Now, the other thing is they tend to give things too much time. They either fall in love with it and ride that thing until, you know, their death, or they tend to say, if it doesn't work in 2 to 4 weeks or whatever, I'm not going to do it. And there are some fantastic ideas I've picked up that have been discarded by other marketers who have just gotten frustrated. And it's funny, it's like I'll come in the last step of the way after they've reviewed with me or shared with me all the things that don't work, and I'll try one or two new things. They work like crazy, and I'm the one who gets to profit from that.
Next marketing mistake is not doing anything. Now, I know that sounds simple, but we've got to put it in here because it's probably the biggest one. It's absolutely insane. People spend money for business opportunities, or they spend money to develop a product, and then they never do anything to market it. How many people do we know like that? They get, you know, you're getting close to the goal line, and then you just go, okay, well, let's call it quits, and they never do anything.
Well, that's back to that old hobby versus business thing. If they're not comfortable, you know, I say to my assistant, I say, when we talk about why people don't succeed, I tell her that I believe that is because they are comfortable, whether they want to admit it or not, waking up at 6, going to the gym, getting back at 7:30, kissing their wife goodbye, going into the commute, going into the office, saying hi to their secretary, going into the office, you know, returning the phone calls, having the lunch. They're comfortable with their daily life, and they're not really willing to make that challenge. There's something that I know is true for me, which is desperation breeds inspiration. And I'm not suggesting that any of you go out and quit your job or do anything to purposefully get fired, but one of the greatest ways to get off your butt and to create action is to lose your job, like I did several years ago. I had a business, a direct marketing business, that did not make a dime. It lost thousands of dollars a year. And then when I finally got fired from my job, it started to make money. The first year, $10,000, the next year, $25,000, the next year, $60,000, the next year, $200,000. I mean, it just goes up. But the reason that it goes up is because I got off my butt and made it work. There's a great saying I have, which is, in order to sell a million of something, you must sell one first. You've got to. People people make plans to sell a million of this, or 5 million of that, or 10 million of that, and they never figure out how they're going to even make the first sale, much less the millionth sale. They just think it's going to happen, and it comes down to getting off your butt.
Well, also, when you say not doing anything, I think a lot of people just assume that literally means not just sitting around. And there's also the whole problem, especially with any entrepreneur, of fake productivity.
Absolutely.
I'm researching. I'm checking out. I'm going to make sure I make no mistakes. I'm going to just sit here and make sure that I don't do what other people don't do. But you're not doing anything by doing that.
You're getting all the marketing mistakes out of the way in this tape, but you're actually right, because in the insurance business, a long time ago I was in the insurance business, and I found out this is extremely common among insurance agents. They produce paperwork and lots of activity, but no real productivity. And what happens is they spend all their time organizing their sales territory, preparing prospecting letters, getting this in order, organizing this, doing this, preparing this, getting ready to sell. And after 6 months, they've never gone out and made a sale, and therefore they're fired.
Exactly, but they're well organized.
Yes.
You know, it's better to do something wrong than nothing right. You've got to get off your butt. A great marketer I know of always says that there's no such thing as an unsuccessful test, because a test will tell you whether something works, whether it's running an ad in a magazine or sending out a direct mail sales letter or coming up with a new sales pitch. If you don't try it, there's no way that you can even determine if it works. You need to get off your butt and take some action. Action is a good thing. Failure means that you have successfully determined one more way that this business does not work, or your particular business or promotion doesn't work.
No matter who you are, you're going to screw up. So the basic thing you've got to do is go out and screw up a lot. When you screw up a lot, some of the things you do are going to work, some of them aren't going to work, and you take the things that do work and you run with them.
Right.
Guinness Book of Business called Ben Feldman the greatest salesperson in the history of the world. He's really a fascinating person. If you type the name Ben Feldman into search engines, you'll
on the internet,
you know, you'll see some information about him, or go to your bookstore. He's written a couple books, and he has just these incredible sayings, and one of them is this: most people, he says, don't do anything wrong. They don't do anything, and that's what's wrong. Now, we don't want to put ourselves up on a pedestal and pretend that we're so great that we've never done this, or we're so good or whatever. And if you're making this mistake, don't feel bad. What we're trying to do is encourage you and say, hey, it's okay if you screw up. It's okay to go out and make mistakes. Jonathan's made mistakes. Declan's made a lot of mistakes. I've certainly made more than my share of mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. Hey, mistakes are okay. Mistakes are good, because that means you're doing something, and that means that you're learning.
Oh, without a doubt. The mistakes that we make are just, they're our entry to success. I have probably failed more than 100 times for each success. I've had a few very big and very good successes, but I've failed hundreds of times. The neat thing is people never look at my failures, although I have far more failures than I do successes. Once you just have a couple of successes, then people don't think about your failures. Once you succeed, people only think about your successes. But let's get those 100 failures out of the way. It's just a process. If you don't get those 100 failures out of the way, you're never going to reach that success.
And it's the common story that any athlete, any entrepreneur, when you really ask them, once they're really, really successful, the time they remember most is when they were making the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the best part.
Oh, yeah, it's hysterical. A lot of these books that you read about entrepreneurs, biographies, autobiographies, they remember all the successes and forget all the failures, and they make themselves look like gods, when in fact they have clay feet just like we all do, and you stumble your way along, and you muddle through it all, and you come out, and you learn a lot, and you keep learning from your mistakes. But they appear to be these icons and these gurus when, in fact, they're just people who had the ability to go out, try a lot of stuff, not be intimidated by mistakes or, quote, apparent failure. And they go out and they do a lot of stuff, they learn a lot of things, and that's how you become an icon or, quote, guru. One of my friends that I really respect in the marketing business, who is in his own right a guru, says, Marlon, he says, all the gurus died back in World War II. he doesn't believe in gurus because he knows, since some people consider him one, that really all a guru is somebody who's gone out, done a lot of things, learned a lot along the way, made mistakes, and has just really tried more things than the average person has. The next marketing mistake, there's actually two of them, these are both related, so I'm going to give them at once, is having too low of margins on a product that you're attempting to sell. And related kind of exactly with that is not having your own proprietary product, that is a product that you own, and trying to make your entire business off of somebody else's product or service that most often you have a real low margin on, or there are so many people out selling it. I've just seen this on a few occasions. There are so many people out selling it and so many people sending direct mail letters on it that it's a little bit of a challenge to sell. So, Jonathan, you mentioned this one beautiful story of somebody that came to one of our seminars and they had those ceramic things and a real low margin on them. Why don't you relate, just kind of encapsulate that?
Well, my two big rules are I only like to sell expensive products, and I only like to do business with people who have money. I guess on the first one, there's nothing wrong with either of those. There's nothing wrong with selling low-margin products, and there's nothing wrong with selling products where you don't own or control the ultimate outcome of those products or the rights to those products. Big if. If you have a plan to have a back-end sales. I mean, it all comes back down to that back-end sales. If you're just using these products in order to get customers, and then you have an expensive product you're going to sell them that you own the rights to or that you control, that's one thing. But to depend, to put your entire business on somebody else's product, to say, well, this is the be-all, end-all, and it's somebody else's product, and you don't really own or control it, or worse, you're buying something and your margin is it's not even just a matter of margin. I also call it the hit. If you have a 10% margin on a $10,000 product, it's a pretty nice chunk of change. It's $1,000. But even if you have a 100% margin on a $20 product, even though you've got a bigger margin, you just don't have enough money to market. You don't have enough money to run your business and to pay all your expenses.
Yeah, it's very your margin is real relevant to the price of the product that you're selling. But let me give you an example of how important margin is. In direct response business or the mail order business, it's real common to have you just about have to have a 5x markup. It's very common to have a 10x markup. And the reason that a lot of times it's difficult in the mail order business to make it on a product that, say, you buy from somebody else and they're shipping it for you, called a drop ship arrangement, and you only have a 50% margin, is because it's probably going to cost you 50% to acquire a new customer in terms of advertising. Then you have the cost of the product added onto that. So what happens is you're losing money every time you get a new customer, and most people don't have the cash flow to lose customers when they get a new one.
And they don't have a back-end product. Like I said, it would be fine if they had a more expensive product or they had a product that they had a greater margin in. That would be fine, assuming they had enough money up front to capitalize the losing of the money to get the customers. Most people don't have either of those. Most people don't have the money to capitalize getting the customers, and they don't have anything else to sell to the customer after they've already sold them one thing.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you don't have deep pockets and you're going to do direct mail, you better have a 5x markup on your product. I say a 10x markup.
I have a 10x markup on just about everything that I sell.